I had to give this session a title. And the title I told Dale to put up on the board was That Seattle Project or Whatever. Because this expresses the curiosity and the puzzlement of people who come up to me and said, what is this I hear about That Seattle Project or Whatever? Let me say in the beginning that I have no intention of creating a community, because I can't, I don't think I can do it. Julie and I do hope to find other people interested in making it possible for a community to come into existence. And we're ready, we'll be ready in June of 1976 to commit ourselves definitely. By that time we'll have fulfilled some obligations that we currently have. We plan to move to Seattle to a specific location yet to be determined. Carol makes much of the fact that Ballard has been talked about. And for a number of reasons, Ballard appeals to me and appeals to other people with whom I've been talking. Well, when we plan to move to Seattle in June of 76, we hope to be joined by other people, and I have no idea how many. There's a fair-sized list of people with whom I'll be in correspondence in the coming year. I hope to send out a monthly newsletter in which I'll spell out my own thinking, and I hope these people will respond, and I'll incorporate their criticisms and their ideas. And I would hope that by a year from now, a lot of thinking will have been done, and a lot of consensus will have been reached, and people will be moving together. The question has risen, why Seattle? And the answer is that Julie and I, want to live in a large city for the obvious advantages that cities have. And I think that community can overcome the disadvantages that cities have. Which city? Well, since almost all of the people, in fact, all of the people presently interested in this have some connection with Holden Village, that meant that it would either have to be, for practical purposes, a place in the Northwest or Minneapolis. I've been out of the North. I grew up in the North, but 10 years in Texas caused me to expect spring to arrive no later than April. Seattle is a beautiful city, and I'm excited about the prospect of moving there. Well, having said that I won't create a community, I'm going to talk about my own fantasies. Let me assure you, the word fantasy for me is a very good word. It doesn't mean something utopian. It means something that you dream about, and the more you dream about it, the more specific and concrete you get. Fantasies are something that you imagine, you express your wishes. I mean, what's the point of not at least hoping for the best? Maybe sometimes our unwillingness to fantasize keeps us from achieving something better than we have. I say I'm going to express my fantasies because these are the ones with which I'm most familiar, but I want to add immediately that there probably isn't a single idea that I'm going to express that hasn't come from somebody else. And some of these ideas will have come from other people just in the 7 weeks or so that I've been at Holden Village this summer. For many years I have thought a good deal about community. What it is, how it functions, why it is lacking, why it's so difficult to create. I've thought about it in relation to all areas of my life and talked about it with my friends. I think I can divide the areas of life into work, consumption, and leisure. Let me say something about community in relationship to, I'll take them, consumption, leisure, and work. I have been impressed with the fact that every family on my block owns, almost every family owns, at least one car, usually two, a wash machine and a dryer, a lawnmower, a freezer, a couple refrigerators, television sets, all kinds of capital equipment that is badly underutilized. The lawnmower for me has become, I'm the only person on the block who does not own a lawnmower. And why is it that all of us have to have a lawnmower which we use for 45 minutes a week, only during the summer? But there are all sorts of other There's lots more capital equipment that we have that we barely use. We have these large yards because, you know, occasionally you want to have a croquet game. But think how much better off we would be if we just had one yard three times as large. But then you see again the problem. What if we all wanted to use it at the same time? Because that's the basic reason that we can't even form carpools. Because everybody is extremely independent. Nobody wants to, you know, have other people pushing him. And so we're wealthy enough to be able to afford each to have his own. Now this is tremendously wasteful from my point of view. But of course, if we don't have any skills in cooperating, if we don't know how to share without getting into hassles, and for the most part we don't, and I'm not pretending that I do, I'm beginning to learn some things about this, how you can share without getting into hassles. But as long as sharing means hassle, we're going to find it cheaper in subjective terms to buy your own. Lots of people have found this out. They start off saying, let's just share a lawnmower. And while they get, after a while, neighbors don't talk to one another anymore. And so they decide it's better each to buy his own. We don't know how to share. We don't know how to cooperate because we don't get very close to one another. And of course, it is our affluence that makes it unnecessary for us to get close to one another. We can purchase a lot of privacy, and so we never have an opportunity to develop the skills of cooperation. The enormous waste associated with this is what compels us to work so hard. So that a person gets his income up to $22,000 a year, but he never has it made. The bills are always running faster. All that capital equipment has to be maintained, and it's always breaking down. And we really become the slaves of our possessions. Now, I don't mean that in any, you know, in the sense in which the preacher gets up in the pulpit and decries materialism. I mean it in the sense in which I feel enslaved when the hot water heater breaks. I just feel trapped. I've got all this crud around the house, and I can't fix it. Reducing consumption is one way to reduce the burden of labor. But reducing consumption is going to be hard for us if it entails a lot of sacrifices, the sacrifice of a high living standard. If we can reduce our spending through sharing, and if we can learn to cooperate so that sharing doesn't mean hassling, I think we can enormously lighten the burden of our lives. All right, let me shift to leisure. Why do so many people live in cities if cities are such unheavenly places? Well, we talk about the problems of the cities. Last week I was running a reading session on Banfield's The Unheavenly City Revisited. Well, it's because for all the disadvantages of the city, many people living in close proximity to one another do create opportunities. That's why people live in the cities. Movies, concerts, restaurants, ball games. There's just all kinds of things you can't do, or can't do often, or can't do well if you don't live in the city. But it's worth noting that our privatism confines these opportunities pretty well to those that are commercially provided. That non-commercial leisure opportunities are much more readily found in small towns than in large cities. Picnics and church suppers and conversations and just getting together and doing things. So, and that's why, you know, some people, they go to the city for the advantages of having all those people and things, and somehow they miss the life of the small town. Of course, if they go to the small town, then they miss the life of the large city. The problem is that in the large city, we don't know one another well enough to be able to create at low cost things like group meals and picnics, volleyball games, amateur musical groups, or just regular conversations with a variety of people. So the leisure opportunities of the city turn out to be very expensive. Much more expensive than those of small towns. And that requires more income then, and hence more labor. I come now to work, community and work. This has been a critical consideration for me in the last year. It has been the one that's tipped the scale. I am not going to bore you with a lot of autobiography, but I will just list. I sat out this afternoon and listed some of the events that have molded my thinking. The impact of Studs Terkel's book, Working, where I discovered that most Americans are miserable at their jobs. My own frustrated attempts for several years to create some sense of community in the place where I work, the economics department at Southern Methodist University. Community for the secretaries, for the graduate students, and for the faculty. Attempts to create some cooperation and sense of collegiality and humanity, which I thought could make the lives and the work of all of us far more satisfying. I met with total frustration and defeat. Conversations that I had over the course of a year with a graduate student who was a Marxist, and where he defended Marxism and I defended the market system. And it turned out he appreciated the market system, but what he could not tolerate was its destruction, its subversion of community. The appearance of a, this is another very crucial thing. I'm convinced that within a few years we're going to have a crisis of work in our society because the economy is no longer, it is not going to be able to provide people that are who are graduating from high school and college with work of the kind that they're expecting. We have a crisis of what I call extravagant expectations. People are expecting jobs that provide income and meaning and prestige, and they're expecting it in a quantity, and it ain't there. I have been heartened by the way in which so many college students whom I know have responded to this, but I'm fearful for the future. They've responded in a very surprisingly unanxious way. They're tending bar, messing around, just waiting. You know, they're not coming out of college the way kids did a few years ago and getting that job with the corporation and starting to move up the ladder. Well, I'm wondering how long they can continue in this way. I worry about them. I pray about them. I hope that somehow they can get together. You know, I learned a lot from watching the way they hang around the university, which is one place where they did once find some kind of community, and they don't want to go out into that world out there, especially when it isn't paying very much now. Another thing that has influenced my thinking is the large and growing number of friends who want to do some work that doesn't pay a living income. Julie is a painter, and she may someday be able to make enough money to support herself, but she can't now. And she's fortunate in that I make enough income to, you know, so I get the income for both of us, and then we can both work at what we want to do. But for a lot of people who aren't married to a wealthy man, Brock, is that not fair?
Yeah, no.
No, that's I mean, it's not. I don't know. there's another problem, too. I think, I don't know whether, well, there's something about some women, I don't know how I would feel. Suppose that I wanted to write and couldn't make a living at it, and Julie was selling paintings and supported me. I think she'd be willing to do that if I wanted to write poetry, but couldn't make a living. But I don't know how I would feel. You know, I would like to do a little work, may bring in a little income anyway, and buy my cigarettes. but there's no practical way to do that. I know that I would like to work with my hands as well as my head. I'd like to find some way to do that. I have been impressed, too, with the anthropology concept of festive labor. I've thought a lot about the old barn raising. I've thought a lot about that while doing dishes over there. Well, I like doing dishes. I like doing dishes with stuff. she sings when she does dishes. Of course, a lot of experiences at Holden Village having to do with work and worship. And I should mention, too, some friends in the SMU Business School who have given me new perspectives on organizations. And then, last thing I'll mention, taking John Wallace home. He lives in Ballard. And seeing an old town within the city, and that started some wheels racing. All right, I'm convinced that we could we could achieve the same output of usable commodities and services at far less human cost if we knew how to cooperate. If we knew how to coordinate our activity in the absence of contracts. But we don't know how. Let me remind you of some important things that you know but perhaps haven't thought about. You know, learning is mostly a matter of discovering the things that you already knew. The most important reason probably that we are so wealthy, that we can all sit around here in good health and well-dressed, that this place exists at all, is because of the division of labor, specialization. If we all tried to produce it ourselves, we would go back to a very, very low standard of life. But division of labor and specialization, you know, where one person does nothing except plumbing, and another person does nothing except handle stockbroker accounts. This requires a tremendous amount of social coordination. Now, there are two ways to achieve this coordination. One is through the hierarchical system, where somebody's in charge and he gives orders, and if it's a very large organization, he gives orders to underlings who give orders to underlings who give orders to people under them. We call that the hierarchical system of coordination. The other is the market system of coordination, where people simply enter into voluntary exchange. Every social organization of which I'm aware has some elements of both voluntary exchange and hierarchical coordination. But and it's you have to have some method of coordination, otherwise people don't get assigned to specific tasks. If you think we don't need some method of coordination, just ask yourself how all the people in New York City manage to get fed every day. That's an extraordinary system of coordination that feeds those people. It's an extraordinary system of coordination that causes the right size plastic bolt to be available in the hardware store for 3 cents when your lawn chair breaks. Probably 150 people cooperated in getting it there. And you got it for 3 cents. And you've got to have a system of social coordination. But and the market system and the hierarchical system are both useful. They both enter into all our work activities. Each has special benefits and special costs. But both of them are wasteful. And both of them are, in practice, highly alienating. Now, I want to talk about the waste and the alienation. And the best way to do that is to ask you to think about the way in which Holden Village operates. The workers, the staff people, enter into loose contracts with the village. Those are contracts. You will get your board and room. In return, you will supply X hours of work. Those contracts are very loose. Sometimes they don't work out. Sometimes staff people feel they've been imposed upon or seriously exploited. Sometimes the people around the village feel that a worker isn't carrying his share. And this sometimes leads to disruption. But for the most part, it works remarkably well. It's an extremely loose contract, but it works well because there happens to be a community here. Because people do sort of pick up for one another and make allowances. People understand sort of what it's all about, and everybody kind of chips in. And when somebody goofs off, it doesn't become nearly as serious a problem as it becomes in the regular workplace. A person who goofs off around here is much more likely to become an object of helpful concern than an object of ridicule or gossip or sometimes envy, you know. That gold brick, I wish I could learn how to goof off the way he knows how to goof off. But consider something like the doing of the dishes. Now, this is really a fairly complex operation that has to be conducted at least six times a day. At least six times, because there are also coffee break, and then people wander into the dining hall and mess around, and then there are the hike house lunches. But at least six times a day, those dishes have to be washed. Now, that goes from getting them off the tables and to getting them back into the cupboards where they belong. And it is really a quite complex operation. Most of the people here have been around long enough to have some sense of how complex it can get. And you know, it's not an operation that you can plan out in detail, because bottlenecks appear for different reasons at different times. For example, if the group feels like singing a long time, you're going to get bottlenecks at the spray part of the operation. Now, I'm not going to go into detail. I have really studied this. I mean, right. In the regular world, in the quote real world, that world out there is no more real than this. But in the usual work world, somebody would sit down and analyze this job into its component parts and figure out how many man hours, woman hours required for each one, and make assignments, give people specific assignments. And this would create problems, because sometimes you would need three people working on the sinks back there, scrubbing pots and pans, and sometimes you'd only need one. If you assigned only one, you would often run into serious bottlenecks. It would bog down the whole operation. We wouldn't get the serving trays back on the table in time for second setting. If you assign three people to it, sometimes they're going to be standing around just wasting their time. So you compromise and you assign two. And then you get the worst of both worlds. The people who are standing around with nothing to do do not feel that that is compensation for the times when they had to work their butts off. They just feel bored and they hate their jobs. And those times, of course, when they are overworked, then they really hate their jobs. So it leads to feelings of resentment and alienation, and you still get the bottlenecks. Now, what tends to happen over there with the good dish crew, when people get to know one another, well, one of the problems, I think, is that people aren't, you should always put new people on dish teams with old and experienced people so they have a chance to get broken in, and be sure they do get broken in. Sometimes people just don't know what's going on. But when people on a dish team know one another and what's going on, they slip around, they slide into different jobs, and the bottlenecks don't appear. And everybody's kind of having a good time. It gives you a good feeling to see somebody else getting behind, and you go over and just with a little effort, you help them out, and they get caught up, and you watch that whole operation slide through. But another thing, of course, is we don't have to do dishes every meal. If we did, it would really get to hang out. But we do other things, too. Now, there are all sorts of lessons in here, but one of the things that we just noticed, one of the things that businesses do when they have this problem, you know, that the job specification keeps shifting unpredictably, is, of course, you appoint a foreman. And then he makes the assignments, and that creates new sets of problems. First of all, people resent the foreman. They wonder why they didn't get the job. And then the foreman, of course, then people start trying to score points with the foreman. And instead of doing a good job, they're trying to impress the foreman. They're not producing, they're trying to satisfy some success indicators. And that's the way in which, that's the sociology of the plant and the shop and the factory. What people are basically doing, I'm convinced now, at work, in these community-less workplaces, is following the rule, cover your behind. That's not the technical term. But you know, you try to do a good job, and you run into peer criticism and envy, a rate buster. And you try to impress the boss, and often the only way to impress the boss is not to do a good job. Hit those success indicators. Don't do what's really needed. Well, let me make a long story short by saying each of us could do about 150% of the job if you wanted to. I'm speaking, you know, in general. Most of us could do at least 50% more than we're expected to do if we were free to do it, if we wanted to. Because we know so much more than the boss about the details of the job. We know our own energies, and we know the people with whom we work. But we're usually required to do about 50% of the job. And when we get that, because if we were ordered to do more than 50%, we would feel it would be unfair. That we're doing more than other people are doing, we would feel resentment. We're struggling to get a 50% assignment. We could do 150%, and when we're assigned 100% of the job, we feel put upon, while we're at the same time wasting our energies. That's not put in very scientific language, but what I'm saying is that we are terribly inefficient. We think we're terribly put upon. Work is a mess. I think it's because we don't know how to cooperate with one another. We don't know how to create community at work. We don't know how to care for the people at work. If the workers in an enterprise comprised a community, I think they could approach Marx's vision of hunting in the morning and farming at midday and writing poetry in the afternoon, or something like that. Because they could exchange jobs, they could teach one another, they could fill in for one another. But that requires a high level of trust. I think that if we learn to trust one another at work, i.e. if we had community at work, we could work far less, we could produce more, and we could enjoy our work a heck of a lot more. Stresses and strains would arise. They would arise. But a real community can deal with stresses before they become disabling. Sometimes by accepting people's deficiencies. Sometimes you accept people's deficiencies. You say, well, that's the way he is. And ain't he nice in certain other ways? And sometimes by offering supportive criticism. Supportive criticism is what we don't know how to offer. The criticism for which the other person is genuinely grateful. you ought to be growing impatient. Let me, I'll wind up. What is this project I have in mind? A group of people who believe the community is something important enough to take risks, to take risks for, will buy or rent in close geographic proximity to one another, probably in Ballard. They will maintain and nurture community among themselves through the bond that is created by a common worship discipline, entailing at minimum, a weekly Eucharist. And so the community will be, in the best sense of that term, a Christian community. Third thing, they will put their talents to work for one another, because they want to. Talents include money and skills. They will invest their talents specifically in some commercial enterprises. And these commercial enterprises will provide, for some members, the whole of their monetary income. It will give other members, whose income comes from outside, I would expect my income to come from outside, a chance to engage in festive labor and to experience the joys that come from helping other people out with little jobs that are sort of fun if you don't have to do it all the time. They will provide community members with a great deal of income in kind, goods that we provide for one another. One of the first things that I hope we do is acquire a restaurant. I see it as a very early and important first step in building the community. Let me just say something about that restaurant, because it indicates some of the problems that we'll probably encounter and some of the ways I'm thinking about them. To purchase a restaurant, to own a restaurant, you can borrow money, of course, but you still have to have some money of your own. And the person who borrows money has to have a good line of credit. It seems to me that I might be the person who puts up all of the capital for the restaurant. Fine, suppose I do. I would then be the owner of the restaurant. Come back to that. I would want a competent manager who wanted to be a member of the community. I wouldn't think of hiring a manager who wasn't eager to become a member of the community. And he would be paid the wage that a manager would get for managing a restaurant of that kind. Probably would take more than one professional person, a couple of people trained in restaurant management. Who knows something about it, maybe who cooked at Holden Village. But, they would be paid a market wage. They'd be paid a wage as good as they could get from doing comparable work in the area. The employees of the restaurant will all be members of the community. Some of them, I hope, will be people like Karen Helen, who she likes to draw. And to make 20, she works as a waitress in a restaurant in Black Forest in Minneapolis. And I hope she comes to Seattle and works in our restaurant. And I hope she can make more money and work fewer hours. some people who just want to do that. Everyone will be a member of the community. Some of the people working in the restaurant will be people like me. But I get a chance to wait on tables occasionally. Because it is fun to just do it occasionally. And that gives Karen more time to take 3 weeks off and go to North Carolina. I don't know if she ever go to North Carolina. Well, wherever she goes, go back to Minneapolis. I don't know. A critical problem will be who owns and finally controls the restaurant. And since I would assume that we will get into other commercial establishments, that's going to be a question that rises frequently. Well, if I put up the capital, I would own it in the eyes of the banks and in the eyes of the law, in the eyes of any other creditors, and hence, legally, anything not covered by contracts, in other words, anything beyond the wages of the employees and other costs that have to be paid, would be mine to control. And I say that very bluntly and briefly. But that is the culmination of a long analysis. I'm not impressed with the experience that producers' cooperatives have had in this country or anywhere in the world. They run into all sorts of difficulties. The restaurant would be, however, the communities in a very important sense. And one of the things I want to find out is whether other people think this is an important and viable sense. The restaurant would belong to the community by dedication. That would be true of any other enterprise which a member of the community purchased through his own funds or through his own line of credit. It would belong to the community by dedication. Something like the communism of the early church. In other words, if I owned the restaurant, say I'm the sole owner, I would pledge myself to exercise my ownership rights in the interest of the community of which I and my family are members. Moreover, this is the important thing, every member of the community would have a right to know anything and everything about the operation of the restaurant, including all of its costs and all of its revenues and where every nickel of profit is going. If any member of the community thought that, you know, suppose the restaurant starts earning a real tidy profit, and they'll know where that profit's going. If I'm taking it out, they will know exactly how much I'm taking out and what I'm doing with it. And if I just say it goes into my household budget, they will have a right to say, I think you're putting entirely too much money into your personal consumption. But they will have a right to discipline me along the lines of Matthew 18. The dedication of property in this way would be a serious step. It's not something that I would encourage anyone to undertake lightly. I can even see if some people hear about this and say, hey, I think I'll turn my textile factory over to this community because it looks like good workers and won't unionize. This would be a very, very serious step. No one would be allowed to do so who had not counseled long and hard about the commitment he was making. What I'm after here is a kind of the advantages of simple control without committees, and at the same time the community control that comes with openness. Would the community itself hold legal title to any property? I don't know. I just don't know. There are problems with that, just as there are problems with privately owned but dedicated property. The problem, you know, with property that is everyone's is that it's often no one's. Everybody litters the parks, which we all own. The community can handle this sometimes. You notice there's very little litter around Holden Village, and that's because we all own the village. Most of us do, and we see a piece of litter, we pick it up. I don't tend to do that in Dallas. But even here, you know, final authority in the village is rested in Carol's hands and Werner's hands. And I think that's good. I think that's necessary. I don't always agree with Carol's decisions. I don't always agree with Werner's decisions. But I've learned not to make mountains out of molehills. I know somebody has to be in charge. And as long as there is openness in the community so that you can criticize the decisions being made by someone who is in responsible authority, I don't think that the problems become disabling. My rule of thumb is authority to managers plus a climate of openness. More than a climate of openness. Openness is required. And by the way, I wouldn't manage the restaurant. When I'm working in the restaurant, I would be take my instructions from the manager. Anything else would be intolerable. Just like Carol does when he goes into the kitchen. He doesn't outrank Stan when he's in the kitchen. In my fantasies, the restaurant makes huge profits. They go into the acquisition of an apartment complex where members of the community live, in which they take care of. Some people now earn income by managing apartments. A preschool center and a motel and an arts and crafts building with studios and a store and a gymnasium and finally a fishing boat. It's a fishing area down there, and I would like to spend several weeks at sea on a fishing boat, I think. what are some of the possibilities that this kind of community creates? Let me just list a few very quickly. A carpool to the concert on the university campus, or the game at the stadium. Carpool easily arranged. Meals together in the banquet room at the restaurant. Chance for all of us to have children and grandparents around. Not our own, but ones that can mean as much to us. beautification and improvement projects in our own homes, the neighborhood feeling in cities, in a city. Neighborhoods don't have crime problems. Areas do, but neighborhoods don't have crime problems. The mutual conversations and consolations of brethren and sister. A focal point for experimentation and new lifestyles, new forms of political action, and too many other things to even begin listing. When I start trying to list them, they're all little bitty things that just come out and they just multiply all over the place. And my inability to list them all convinces me that this is the right step. What are some of the risks? I don't know. Obviously, the big ones I haven't thought about. But I haven't found any risks that strike me as worth mentioning. At least they don't strike me as worth mentioning at this stage of my life. And a lot of the other people who are, I know, thinking about this project are also at a stage in their lives where it doesn't entail an enormous risk. If you haven't built a career yet, you don't throw one away. And I've thrown mine away already, so. But the risks, anyway, all seem acceptable, all completely acceptable when I lay them against the powers that I see residing in the community. Let me wind up by saying that I am no naive believer in organizations. I'm not a believer in organizations at all. I used to belong to the SOS Society. That means some organizations stink. I've now joined the OAS, Organization of American States, or Organizations All Stink. I don't believe that a genuine community, which is quite different from an organization, a mere organization, is something that people can easily construct. I don't believe that people can easily construct a genuine community. Matter of fact, I think I don't believe that people can create them at all. But I believe that God can. Communities are gifts. The real communities can only be created by people who have a sense of the community as a remarkable gift to them. This article of faith has been already in some conversations with friends who are not Christians, and it will be when I get back to Dallas with more friends who are not Christians, a source of considerable dismay. One friend down near San Francisco was saying, I don't understand this worship business. What's this got to do with it? And I'm extremely sorry that they are dismayed by my turned toward religion in my old age. But here I stand, I cannot do otherwise. I am convinced that a community, a genuine community, is something that is created by a spirit that we do not control. And the communities that I have seen created have been created in the context of the gospel. So that's the kind of community that I'm going to wait around to see happen. And I'm going to do the things that the church does in the way of getting ready for the spirit that God's going to blow. I believe that community is possible through, I've seen it, I know community is possible through regular forgiveness and renewal, the kind of things that Christians know about and that Christians can communicate to one another and remind one another about so that they can engage in supportive criticism. Maybe Ephesians 4, you know, a lot of us studied Ephesians 4 last Saturday night, and maybe that kind of becomes the text for the community. And community is possible, I've seen it happen, I know it is, through the continual rebinding of each to the other that occurs through a weekly Eucharist. When we're bound back to one another, quite despite what we are. I believe, finally, that God does care about the social arrangements into which we enter, with which we live. I think that God does want us to transform society. I think He's wanted us to do that for a long time. And I think He's been helping us to transform society. I believe that society is being continually reshaped more and more in the image of its Creator. I do not believe, however, that when we go out and transform society, to fulfill the will of God, that what we do is always the will of God. There's an important distinction between believing that God wills you to transform society and believing that the way you're trying to transform society is the will of God. We do that in faith and hope and fully acknowledging the possibility that we may be wrong. But if we know that we may be wrong, when we're out pursuing our best ideals, there is also forgiveness, thank God, for our idealism.
Paul,
now,
how are you going to determine your populace? It seems like a really ideal situation, but it seems like that all the people that would want to become involved would have to have some sort of a way of deciding who's going to become involved.
You mean of screening people out?
No, I mean
finding people.
Finding people. Oh, screening people in.
Yeah.
Well, I'm certainly not going to run around the country trying to talk people in. I'm not making this presentation tonight to try to talk anybody into anything. So I don't know, Angela. I don't know how that would work out. I have found in conversations with people this summer that there are a lot of people who are vibrating along these same lines.
Well, my question really was, is are you going to have a limit on the population? Because it seems to me like it would be an ideal lifestyle if it came to pass. But I don't know anything about Ballard. I don't know how big it is or how much space you have.
Well, it's a part of Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I think about. I don't know. I don't know. I just don't know. That's a problem.
Yeah.
I'm not going to worry about how to get enough people, and at the same time worry about how to keep all those people out. Let me say one thing. I would anticipate that if a community like this works, there will be a lot of people who are not willing to join the community, and shouldn't be a lot, because they're not willing to accept that the commitment, the worship discipline, and the commitment that that entails, but who will want to be affiliates of the community. And I see no reason why there can't be an infinite, indefinite number of affiliates of the community. I'm not interested in a community in a city that becomes an exclusive club.
As I see it, Paul, you will naturally attract a certain number. You need a place of refuge, a place of healing. And this is where you may have the most difficulty in a community committed like you are to the Lord Jesus Christ, that it's terribly hard to say no, and for the sake of the community, it's terribly necessary to.
This
will be one of the areas which is going to give.
I think it's possible, Carol, because there is this commitment to the community. I think it is possible to welcome people and give them refuge and hospitality without admitting them to the community.
Now, I think that's what we have to
accept. How do you envision the amount of housing to be taken down for the community?
Well, Paul, Julie and I plan to go there and rent a house. And then my hope is that people just come and they'll. I don't know. It depends on who comes and what they can afford, what they're looking for. Maybe we could take over. Maybe one of the first things to try to purchase would be an apartment complex. Although I don't think it's necessary. I don't think it's necessary for people in the community to live on top of one another, bicycling distance at most. Good walking distance.
Sure.
Right, but within walking distance. See, so that at some central point, maybe the restaurant, there's a bulletin board. Notices are up there. You always know what's going on, where people are. People meet there and they find out things. You know, if you want to get a volleyball game going, you can just put an announcement up on the bulletin board, and you don't have to sit down and call and find that everybody's out.
Would people eat meals together? How important is that aspect?
I would imagine they would eat a lot of meals together.
Yeah.
Because it's economical and it's fun. It's economical and it's fun.
So even your step of renting a one-family house wouldn't be completely traditional in the eating sense. I mean, everybody would eat together.
No, everybody wouldn't always eat together. People would, I would imagine, as I think about it, people would pay for the meals that they eat. I would see members of the community eating in the banquet room, you know, separate room in the back somewhere. Maybe we'd have to have two banquet rooms. I don't know, depends on how much business we get.
I think one good thing is what there's a little bit of publishing now, even our bit of publishing here. But that, because there are other areas very interested in the same, like now Toledo, St. Paul's, they've had, you know, people out here for 2 weeks at a time to studying, asking. And in that case, it's a contractor that's most interested, 75 minutes of boy. And we've got an architectural and construction deal here that you could set up right in the inner city. And they're really struggling with it there. If you succeed here, it will certainly spring elsewhere.
Well, if we succeed, then we'll publish.
What's going to define who's in the, I mean, is there going to, are there going to be definitions of who's in the community and who's not? I mean, if someone shows up for Eucharist one Sunday, I mean, you know, is there going to be a definition or not? I mean,
yeah, I think it would be something like a confirmation rite, you know, some kind of rite of admission to the community, where you fully understand what this entails.
Because otherwise, I think it would be so loose-knit that it might eventually just sort of,
it can't be loose-knit. I mean, there has to be a core of people who are committed to one another. You see, one of the reasons that we don't work well with one another is because it's too easy for us to run away when problems arise. And we've got to, I'll just repeat this story, because it really was a crucial thing in my thinking this year. I told it to a number of you. When I was working down at SMU for 3 or 4 years, at great, great personal cost, to try to fashion some sense of collegiality in my department, I was getting nowhere, absolutely nowhere. Finally, a friend, an older colleague, who was very friendly toward me, formerly been my teacher, called me and he said, Paul, I admire what you're doing, but you're confusing the university with the church. And that I realized that I had no place to go. I was appealing to these people in the name of humanity, of their own humanity. I was writing, we are treating one another inhumanely. I made that flat assertion in a document that I circulated, and I asked for responses, and I got no responses. That seems to me that's a fairly serious accusation. But you see, what they said is, we don't have to respond to you, because this is not a church, this is a university. Well, I want a community where people can't do that. If I address you seriously and earnestly, you have to answer. You can't run away. And so if you have people who are loosely attached, they can run away. You understand?
Mm-hmm. I think your major problem, Paul, is, as these two guys have seen it in the last conversation, we can't meet about headquarters and the same thing, it is a... You're lucky in that you are a pastor as well as an economist and so on, and if the community will allow you the pastoral role, someone has to have it that does have some antenna to be sensitive to things before they happen, you know? I mean, this is the one key thing, a sensitive pastoral role, so that some situations never have to come into the open understanding of each other, you know?
Well, Carol, don't you think there can be a lot of pastors? There are people here who not only aren't ordained, they haven't even graduated from college, who I think have those pastoral antennas.
Now, that's just true.
I think it's something we can cultivate. Yeah. No, but these things don't have to be brought into the open. You know, often a problem is will be between two people.
Yeah.
And they don't have to bring it into the open. They just,
I think that priestly role in each other is the all-important one. I think the rest can see come along pretty well, if that's the...
Paul, how do you conceive of your continuing relationship to the university, or to the existing institution?
That's something that I've puzzled about. My thinking has been changing on it the last couple of days. I had just assumed originally... I obviously hadn't thought it out very carefully. I think the community has to be a church. It can't. It would simply drown any parish. It is a congregation. Yeah. It is a congregation. It would simply drown any parish that it got into, create possible problems.
You talked about dedicating property, but I don't have a very clear picture of how you visualize that property shall be held, and how you sort out what shall become community property, if any, and what shall be public property.
Paul, I can see the community operating, and I may be wrong about this, but I can see it operating, owning no property in its own name, with all of its property owned by members, individual members, or perhaps a couple of members together, some kind of partnership.
Does one dedicate property? What happens when you dedicate property?
You turn over a specified property, and a property, of course, is always a set of rights and responsibilities, to the use of the community. You know, see, property is not a physical thing. Property is a set of relationships. In other words, right now there's a sense in which I own this chair. This chair is my property because our legal and social arrangements say first one who sits in it in the session gets it. If you get up and leave it, it's nobody's property, and then first one to come along can reclaim it. Or if you get up and just say I'm going to the bathroom, then you retain your ownership right. Actually, this is what property is. You own your car. That means that you can drive it when you please, but it doesn't mean that you can carry people for hire, because that's forbidden by the law. There are all sorts of legal restrictions on property and social restrictions on property. You know, if you own a motorcycle, you can drive it wherever you want to, and unfortunately, you can even drive it past my house. But you can dump your noise on me, you can't dump your garbage on my lawn. I would retain, if I, you know, I use myself as an example, but if I put up the capital to provide the restaurant, I would retain legal title to it. Dedicating it to the community would mean that the community has a right, it would mean two things. Everything that I do in my capacity as owner is open to the members of the community. I'm thinking primarily of the disposition of the profits. And they have a right to fault me for any mismanagement of those resources. I am still the person who is responsible for those resources, but I am responsible to them. Does that make sense?
Does the community have a right to direct you in the disposition of profits, if any?
I think so. Does Matthew 18 give the community the right to direct a Christian? I think it does.
A legal right?
No. It does not give it a legal right. But if we have to fall back on the courts of law, we've failed in a very important respect. Let me point out here that suppose I turned out to be a schnook. Or suppose I am a schnook. And what I do is I get all these people working their heads on the creek, just this marvelous restaurant. People come and say, I love to go to this, such a happy place. You know, and we do a lot of business, and we make $4 million the first year. And I buy a jet airplane. And the community cannot persuade me that what I'm doing is wrong. Then the community might simply decide they had to put me under discipline. And I could finally be required to leave the community. Excommunication is a possibility. Where does the law get tied up in that? Well, the community would know that if it excommunicates me, the restaurant goes too. My point is that the risk is no one is being asked to take an extraordinary risk about which a lawyer would caution him to go carefully. I don't think so. I've thought a lot about this whole problem of property rights and property relationships, because it seems to me that it's a great can of worms. Community property is the biggest can of worms. Privately owned property that is dedicated to others, well, it makes sense to me.
Well, say, Paul, you decided to pull out of the community.
I would assume not. I don't know. Why did I pull out? Suppose that my doctor says I can't, all that water that descends from the heavens in the winter is, you know, causing my heels to rot, and I have to go to Tucson. I don't know. I suppose I don't know. What would I do? I don't know. What would I want? If the restaurant is very, if the restaurant isn't successful, might as well give it to them. if the restaurant isn't successful, it's going to have very low capital value. And if the restaurant is successful, the community will want it. If the community will want it, won't they make some amicable relations with me? What do I need? I'll have to live in Tucson. The community will understand that.
But the community couldn't, the restaurant couldn't be successful without the community that's working in there with this spirit. Yeah. They could decide to pull out and put their energy somewhere else.
I think so. Oh, sure. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, you've got a concept.
Right. If the community would make these commercial establishments go, but the person, Jim was now raising another question. How does the person who puts his money in there, how is he protected? You know, if something happens, that he has to leave. I just think the community will settle this amicably. If I would just say, look, here's what I think, how much income I will need to live in Tucson until I get a job. And then if I get a good job, send it all back. I'll use it to start a new one down in Tucson.
That goes back to your original point of having, you know, trust and faith in the community, you know.
Yes.
Well, why are you so opposed to community ownership? You said you had basis of experience, or you had reasons for opposing it. What are the reasons?
Reading of history, where I don't think...
Most religious-oriented societies that have done something, certainly not, this is unique, but most societies that have done something along this line have been organized as, some years back as communes, more recently as cooperatives, and apparently it's been successful.
I don't know any that have been successful in the city.
Not in the city. That's true. They tend usually to go out. They tend to be tied to the land, or more isolated community. But what you must have given us a lot of thought. What was the input into your decision that this would not work?
Tom's basically, I couldn't think of any way that it would work. I mean, you get into how do you work out communal ownership? One thing that you have is interminable meetings.
The Holden Board doesn't consume that much time, and again, it's because of a kind of a mutual trust. The board doesn't have to decide every little thing like departmental committees do. But
Holden Village isn't really owned by. I mean, that's a metaphor, and it's a useful metaphor, and I value Carol's metaphor. You're all owners of the village, but it is a metaphor. You know, really, we're not. You cannot choose members of the board, and you and I cannot choose the director. The director and the members of the board form a kind of automatic self-perpetuating oligarchy.
But would we have feel the same relationship to Carol if he owned the thing, lock, stock, and barrel? Wouldn't that automatically change our relationship?
I think it would. But does Carol have a lot less authority than he would have if he owned the place locked
down? Not authority, but there's quite a difference.
I don't see how
you can have ownership like this of a major part of the assets of the community without creating a hierarchy right off the bat.
Well, if that proves to be the case, I would move to do something else, do it some other way. I've just given a lot of thought to this whole business of dedication of property, and it seems to me to be consistent with, you see, maybe it would help keep in mind my desire to secure cooperation with a minimum of contracts. I am interested in his relationships of trust, not relationships of contract. And any kind of, you know, community property or formal profit sharing plan is a kind of a contract. And I would like us to get beyond that. I think some contracts are necessary. I think the people who work in the restaurant should have a contractual wage. They will not, you know, receive what the owner in his generosity decides to give them. Not at all. They'll get a contractual wage. I do believe that I would be happier. This is the way I've kind of tested it out. That I would be happier working in such a restaurant if I knew everything about the operation of it than if I had some kind of, you know, 1/50th share. Which means what?
Not just that, but out of that contractor wage, they can eventually be entrepreneurs in something else again, too. Which is, I think, all of the good for our kind of society. Our problem here in the village, I sometimes felt like everybody talks more about it, but everybody that handled equipment was required to go out and beg for, just say, $200. It would make a great difference in the way they handle equipment. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Go ahead.
So far, you.
But just let me say, I'm not recognizing hands. The people are talking and hands going. So you're going to have to just chime in. Loudest gets in first. You're first, Loud.
The measure of success of the community you talked about so far, about, you know, the restaurant really, you know, getting a lot of good business, and then maybe going into apartments and then the craft center, et cetera, et cetera. Do you measure the success of the community, which is actually also in a larger community? I mean, it would be a different kind of community, but this thing would be in, let's say, Ballard, which is another community. Do you measure the success of the community in additional terms other than it's getting more?
Well, I would measure its success largely in its ability to provide expanded opportunities for its members. Expanded opportunities to carpool, change the world, talk to one another. The success of the community would be its ability to make possible, to make actual the fantasies of its members. Is that an answer?
Well, yeah, I guess I was sort of thinking about the inner community to the outer community relationship.
I think that would be an important part of some members' fantasy.
Yeah, okay.
Suppose, Paul, you start with this nucleus of a restaurant, which is to be to serve two purposes, a place of gathering and also an opportunity to make profit. Now, suppose other people joined your community and had sufficient capital to want to start a different kind of business and yet remain in the community. Now, would the same thing, suppose Julie's paintings got, her income became greater than the cost of her materials and what she might consider her time worth. Would her profit go then the same way the restaurant profit goes? If somebody started a boutique down the street, would his profit go like your restaurant profit goes?
No. Suppose a member of the community. See, lots of members of the community, I think, would derive their income from outside, and that income would not be. I would not have to report that income to the community. People aren't required to, you know, list all their income and assets and all that. The senators are supposed to these days. But if someone wanted to open an establishment, there would be a community establishment that would be dedicated to the community. Somebody could open a commercial. Suppose somebody derives his income from running a gas station, which he owns. Fine. I would be surprised that he wouldn't want to make it part of the community. And he wouldn't want to dedicate it to the community. I'd be surprised, but it's possible.
Paul, if you don't keep the profits from the restaurant, you just take out for your needs. I take it that the profits over and above your needs go into investing in apartments or whatever. Wouldn't that get you into community property? Who would own the apartments?
Well, unfortunately, I would. That's the problem. Look, the thing is, I don't think it's going to work out that way. Now, I am very sensitive to the dangers of concentrations of power. I'm very sensitive to that, and I wouldn't let that happen as far as I was the one doing it. In other words, if I owned a restaurant, suppose we also opened a couple other enterprises, and the restaurant was the big successful one, I would do something to make sure that I didn't accumulate large quantities of property.
You could put it in a trust.
I would probably distribute. I don't know. I might just distribute it to
community services. Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're, you know, I don't know. It would be awful if one member of the community owns.
But you have a capital acquisition, and that has to ultimately go to somebody.
Yeah.
Now, I'm being sort of a devil's advocate because I'm very sympathetic with what you're saying. But if you didn't put it in a trust for the benefit of somebody, you might make Paul a millionaire. You know, because I, as a devil's advocate, I would say I look at this thing as being a, I'd love to set up a business where I had a captive clientele. And frankly, that's what it sounds like to me. I'm sure that's not what you intend. But I've, you know, lived in the business world, and I guess that's the way my mind works. I would love to own a business if I knew I had a captive clientele.
Who would a captive clientele tell me that?
The community.
Well, but they're not going to make profits for the restaurant.
Would be working towards making the restaurant a successful enterprise.
Yeah, we would have a marvelous workforce. That's what we'd have.
It would be fun.
Yeah, but things.
But it might work. I mean, our customers are coming from the city. Might be that it might be so successful that it could make you a millionaire.
Okay, suppose it does.
Suppose it does.
I don't want to become a millionaire. I will not become
a millionaire. I'm not idealistic enough to feel that all the people associated, you know, it was Peter Berrigan in Canada who did just that, you know, and went to Argentina with all the profits he had. You know?
That's why the community would object if I bought a jet plane. But Jack, this is a funny sort of thing to worry about. You know, when you're wondering whether you can get enough capital together, you have to worry. What happens if you think of something?
Probably, I'm more concerned now because Paul raised this, and I totally was playing around my mind. You know, what would concern me more in this community is that I couldn't drive my child out of my home if he didn't go to church. But it sounds to me like this is a one-generation community because I and my wife may subscribe. But what if my children choose not to go to church, not to observe the rules? Do I have to, sure, when they reach 18 or whatever, kick them out?
Kick them out? You don't have to kick them out of anything. What would you have to kick them out of?
Well, what is the...
You can certainly bring... Look, when your Uncle Harry comes to visit, you can certainly bring him to the restroom. You can bring him to anything in the community.
Well,
he's not a member of the
community. Worship observance would have to be strictly enforced. You know, and I think that's a good idea if you're setting up a religious community.
Yeah.
Then,
depends what the privileges are.
Then what is your, the community would be able to be, being able to worship in that particular congregation, because you say it would be a congregational sort of setting, and to eat in the restroom as far as I can see.
Your kids would not be able to work in the institutions
that's
dedicated
right.
to the community. There would be certain privileges over a period of time that accrue to members of the community. Other people would be excluded.
Yeah.
Just to be able to work in the community.
Well, there might be all kinds of things. Who knows?
We need a better definition of community. I think we're just finding, Paul, you're leaning more towards a spiritual community, brothership, a brotherhood community, rather than a physical community. I think some people are confusing that, at least I am. You're leaving yourself open to the tyranny of the city. You've got to put up with the city's transportation. You've got to put up with the city's building codes, whatever else the city entails. You're going to have motorcycles driving by your house. Myself, I have an idealistic view of community, and it entails much more thought as to the physical planning of the city, so that I wouldn't have to put up with smog and motorcycles I didn't desire.
Right. Well, that's a good point. I'm just struck with the difficulties in the way of trying too much to control the physical environment. I don't think the physical environment is all that important. I think the people are far more important in the relationships that they have. Proximity is important. But that's the one thing. That's the one physical thing that's essential. Proximity.
What concerns me, I think, in terms of the impact that this begins to go is a resulting rise in property values and the interrelationship of this community to the whole community, and whether it makes it so attractive to all the prices, or whether you get such resentment that people will die. I don't know what's going to happen. I think the relationship of this community to other people is a very crucial factor, and the property value rise is the thing that
relationship of this community to the area, and then of this area to other areas of Seattle, is it?
I would right along.
And I guess I would never have mentioned Ballard several weeks ago if I had realized how much interest there was in Golden Village in this and how it would be bandied around. I'm fearful right now.
Well,
it's gonna. Where's gonna get back there? I'm sure the word's gonna get back into Ballard sometime this year that there's some nut in Texas. He's gonna take over with a bunch of long-haired hippies.
What will your relationship be to the IRS?
Cordial. I don't see any particular tax problems arising under this. I can see the possibility of some tax advantages arising. Yeah, and I'm quite willing to take advantage of any tax breaks. Because one of the small reasons I'm in on this is my growing disillusionment with the federal government. And I'm in favor of abolishing the federal government. And one way to do that is cut off its funds. I don't want to go to jail for that, and I will not go to jail for that. But any small way in which I can, without committing fraud, reduce the income of the federal government, I am happy to do. Yeah, this.
Have you given any thought to education?
Oh, yes.
What is that going to entail? Are you going to?
I don't know. It depends on who lives there. If you have a lot of children living there, it seems to me we would either markedly improve the public schools or create schools of our own. I mean, that's going to depend on how many people you have there and what their talents are and their interests. I think I very much like the idea of a community that has its own schools, but I think there's a certain minimum size there that's. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that school does for kids is introduce them to all the people in the area, the kids in the area. And if you have only 7 children in the community and you try to operate your own school, well, I went to a parochial school that was very small, and it was miserable for me during the summer. I didn't know anybody. Then when I went off to high school in another city, I came home and I didn't know anybody. You know, they say, why do kids go to school if school is such a miserable place? And the answer is that's where their friends are also imprisoned.
What about the proclamation of the gospel to the outside community or the growth of the community in the faith?
Can we use the word area when we're talking about the physical area in which the community? When I say community, I mean I know we use the term. What community do you live in? I live in Dallas. Well, Dallas is not a community. Dallas is a city, and it's a physical area.
To the area outside.
Okay. All right, that's your time. But what relationship do we have? What relationship
does the community that you're talking about have to the outside in terms of propagation of the gospel, proclaiming the gospel? And secondly, where is it at in terms of growing the faith as a community, that is, as a group? I'm not making myself clear.
Well, I guess I don't know what to say in response to the questions.
Well, Paul, the first question, you the whole community would be a living witness and would always be.
And you'll have the same position as IOT Doors that we do here in the village, where you've got a tent ministry and a pastor that comes with it who's going to be working in a dishwashing machine in the restaurant that he owns. So you have no local expenses in the congregation. And you do have a tricky tax advantage. You certainly aren't wanting to accumulate a lot of material. So the money that you do have will be used for that. And then no question about it. Our little tiny congregation here that has, I think, 7 people, any kind of income at all, was able to give away $1,500 last year. It was able to give some up to a family in Portland that's having it tough to venture out in Hawaii that's sort of bogged down. And so on. You know, there are a lot of avenues that will come in that gospel picture. These are gospel-shaped people in a gospel-shaped community. The gospel is going to go. No, you don't keep it for yourself.
I guess I had a hard time visualizing that in terms of, you know, one Eucharist a week or one worship service a week. You know, that to me didn't really speak to that question.
Well, I mentioned the mutual conversations and consolations of brethren.
Problem I have most of all with it is the same problem I have in the village, and when there is a need of discipline. Now, the way ours is set up, I'm the only one in the village that makes the decision. So whoever goes out doesn't hate a whole group of people. You just can hate me, and that can be overcome in due time. You know, I mean, it's a lot more merciful for one guy to exclude a person than for a whole community to do it. And this is the problem I have, where the whole community would operate like in Matthew 18. And there would be very difficult, I think, for a reconciliation. Maybe it could, but...
Well, you know, Matthew 18 has a lot of preliminary steps.
I know. The preliminary steps are the one that would hope the world.
Yeah.
Paul, you mentioned the...
Yeah, listen, Barb has been so politely waving her hand. I said, don't wave your hand, speak up. So Barb, you want to speak up?
Look better. I was wondering if you have any historical precedents for this system of dedication of property, whether that ever worked.
There are no specific ones I could cite.
Would that dedication involve any kind of a public gathering and, you know, public... declaration?
Yes.
Yes.
Do
we worship outside the regular established church?
Stan, I'm convinced, I didn't think this at the beginning, but I'm convinced that the community would have to become a congregation.
Why? Say you're convinced, but I don't understand why.
Because it just wouldn't fit in any other congregation. It wouldn't fit in. Because my goodness. For the reason that I don't even fit in any congregation that I know of in Dallas. And if there were three like me, you know, I mean...
But Ballard First Lutheran is a very unusual church. A lot of people like it. Some of them have not been there for three generations. They've been like the pastor 7 years ago. A lot of different
kinds of people. Yeah. I mean, I don't, you know...
No, I don't know what you
think. Somebody asked
aligned with something.
Yeah, yeah. Was it Al? Did you ask the question, and I never finished answering about the. Someone got off on that, the relationship to the institutional church, the Missouri Synod. I've been purged from the clergy roles in the Missouri Synod, so that I've been set free, as it were. I don't know. I really don't know about this. This is a problem for me. The people, I am Lutheran by history. And the people who are currently interested in this community are also, for the most part. And so the congregation, the worship, would be Lutheran in coloration. But does it have to be Lutheran in name? I don't know. I don't think so. I hope not.
I would think some of these things you don't want to be too rigid about until life develops.
Right. Yeah. I don't know.
The reason I was concerned about that is that Seattle has already had a series of preachy groups.
Well, you're lucky you got both Malcolm and Don over there in first, so they could eat
Well, I don't know. Al is right. I should not. These are questions that would be worked out.
Anybody have to come to Minneapolis
after all? It's a sense that if I found myself living, I very much believe in the parish church, but if I found myself sitting next to a Lutheran church where the minister celebrated the Eucharist once a month with a dour face, something would have to give. For me, I mean, I just couldn't have it there.
You cited the waste of different, you know, the neighborhoods where everyone has their 2 cars and television and washer and dryer and so forth. Is your idea then that someone would have a laundromat and this would be used, or that you would share a washer and dryer?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. There are all kinds of funny ways to do these things. Julie and I have a very large living room at home, which we built because we like to entertain friends, and I also thought we have a lot of students over. Now, That would be unnecessary. That's one big piece of physical capital equipment you wouldn't have to have, a large living room. I've been thinking, Julia says it's stupid. I've been thinking about getting a second refrigerator. We have five children. And, you know, by the time you get all the milk and the leftovers, and sometimes there's no room for the beer. but, you know, I can keep my keg down at the restaurant. I don't know. It's a sense with lawnmowers, by golly.
One lawnmower.
Well, see, there's a contractor that is building right now a three-way living deal with no lawn at all. And so you would be much more impressed by that.
Yeah, but all these lawn tools, you know, everybody's got his own lawn. I would like to live with people who go around and do one another. They work together on lawns. It's a lot more fun. And then everybody has to go out and do his own. And that way we can share too.
Perhaps not every family will have to own an ink loom, huh?
Whatever that is. I want to say that it's 20 minutes to 11.
But I would just say this one thing.
Carol, don't say one more thing because right. I said that before Tim was about to speak.
All right.
So don't adjourn the meeting. Right. I wanted to assure people who I believe that they could. Some have been leaving already, but don't feel embarrassed about leaving.
As you've been talking, a lot of things that you've been saying have at least dovetailed with the community I was in last year, that is the Concordia Seminary and Exile community, because in a lot of respects, before that was anything else, it was a community of people who were dissatisfied with working conditions. You know, and I wonder why. A lot of things that you've been hinting at, we've already had to work through in certain ways, of course, not all the things, but for instance, in the worship question, though the people at the Seminex community did attend different congregations, it was extremely important that they had communal worship. That was the essence of the community, and that was done, of course, daily with the weekly Eucharist, and then sometimes at night, too. So, if there were an option for people attending different congregations, it seems to me that might be carried out, but with the necessity of communal worship sometime during the day. Another thing that was extremely important in the creation of community, the first building that we had was a living center called the Commons. Classes were done there, just everything. Communication center, donut shop, mail, everything. It was a place where people could just come for community. Seems like that would be a very important building to acquire, a communal center before anything else. Where people just do everything and then buildings go out from there. You know, restaurants, apartments, bowling alleys or whatever else you're going to pull about. That there would be a communal center. And one problem Seminex really ran into, which caused a great deal of hassle, was the necessity of some kind of internal governance. And a lot of questions that have arisen tonight have dealt with logistical matters and property ownership discipline. And the internal governance question was one that took that community 2 years to resolve. And for such a small community of only about 300 people, you know, who makes the decisions? How are the decisions made? What's the hierarchical order of handing down decisions? One point within that whole internal governance thing, which was sort of the lifeblood of the Seminex community, was that every member of the community, faculty, staff, husbands of students, and wives of students, had a vote in most everything that the community did. While there were many different committees that made decisions, everybody had a vote in what happened to the community as a whole. That sort of carried the spirit along with worship of what that particular community did. I think a lot of the things that you might be struggling with might pay you just to get engaged in maybe more lively dialogue with some of the people there, because it has a lot of similarities with what you're trying to do, and I'm really excited with what you do. I really like it. I don't even think about that for myself a little bit more.
Well, I am in touch with quite a few people at the seminar.
The whole thing seems to me that where people are gathered, your needs aren't gonna all of a sudden change. But Paul, when you get a group of people together that are committed to each other, how are you gonna resolve your washing machine problem? How are you gonna resolve your need to get together for a meeting place? How are you gonna resolve your ownership? Are you gonna be solved if the people are there, mainly because they're committed to each other. And committed to each other by the gospel. Now the needs are gonna be met. That's what's important. And people are gonna be willing to share their abilities. Do that
to
make it come
about. Yeah, you know, that how many people, this hooks up with what you were saying, how many people are there, whether at Seminex this past year? How many students?
450, but about 100 were out, so there's about a population of 350.
350, add wives, add faculty, add their wives. What's the total community?
Oh. Must be 700, 600.
Okay, now scattered over how large a geographic area?
That was a problem, a wide geographic area.
So that's getting up to the maximum size, beyond it. I think that's too large. When you get special kinds of problems. I mean, it becomes impossible to deal with people on a... You know, it's you, people with unique problems. You have to establish, you have to go to votes, and voting is already the breakdown of democracy.